Blog Talk Radio.
This is Mark Rawson. You're listening to Spiritual Connections Radio. I'd like to welcome you to another great radio show. As you know, we run our show every Thursday from 9:30 to 10:30 Eastern Standard. Been getting a lot of incredible feedback. Before I get ahead of myself, I just want to let you know we do have a special event coming up on Saturday, July 20th at 5 p.m., where I will be teaching on how to connect with angels, and that broadcast will be taught live in Tampa, Florida, but it will also be broadcasted both on Blog Talk Radio and also live video stream globally with Ustream. So I know I've been getting a lot of feedback on the different classes and everything. If you've missed any of them, they're all up in the replay and the archives for Blog Talk. We have one on manifestation. And we have another one on past life regression. So everybody seems to really be enjoying the different things that we're teaching and everything like that. So thank you for all the great feedback. As always, if you want to find out more about our radio show and the other radio shows, because we have a number of people that actually have their own shows under Spiritual Connections Radio now, you can find out about us by going to our website at www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. And with that, I'm going to introduce my host, Pam. Pam, are you there?
I am. Well, it's a lovely night here in Florida. I hope it's lovely where everyone is.
Yeah, I'm up in Massachusetts at Kapalo, which is a what used to be a spiritual school for yoga. And over the last year or so, or year and a half or so, it's become more of a place where a lot of spiritual teachers actually go to teach. So I've been here for the week. Absolutely beautiful area. Yeah, up here in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. I basically flew in and out of Albany. So I'm doing this live from the Apple Tree Inn in Stockbridge, Massachusetts.
How nice. Well, Florida's beautiful, and I just wanted to tell all of our listeners who happen to be Islamic, happy Ramadan or Ramadan Kareem. I am sensitive to this subject since I lived in the Middle East for 10 years, and I know this begins yesterday. Actually began the holy month of Ramadan, which is very much like our Christmas. And so anybody listening to us from the Middle East, which I think we have a lot of archive listeners right now. It's in the middle of the night for them. But Ramadan Kareem, which means happy Ramadan to everyone. The second thing I wanted to mention to you, Mark, that's happening in a community level here in Tampa on the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, is the Body, Mind, Spirit Expo here in Tampa. So if anybody in the area, or if you're going to be in the area, please come to the expo, to the Sheraton on West Shore. And it proves to be, as usual, an amazing event. I'm one of the keynote speakers. I'm speaking at 2:00, and we're doing sort of open readings, mediumship readings, spirit guide, angel, and loved ones that have passed on. So it'll be just sort of an open forum at 2:00, and then 5:00, I'm doing a 1-hour lecture on the power to change reality, which is not at all the same. It's very quantum physics, but it carries a lot of weight in making things happen in an easier way. So, it really is exciting. I'm looking forward to it. And there's lots of other speakers, too. Many are good friends of mine. Patricia McGivern is going to be talking about past life regression. And there's just one right after another, and it's all free with your entrance. So it's a wonderful, fun thing to do. If you're in the area, please come. Tonight, we have an amazing guest who I just met moments ago. So other than his bio, I'm going to let him tell you about himself. His name is Dr. Henry Grayson, and he's a renowned psychologist, PhD. He teaches effective methods we can all use to reprogram our mind bodies for optimal health. Now, this sounds fascinating. So I'd like to welcome Dr. Grayson. Are you there?
I'm here. Thank you. Good to be with you.
Thank you. It's wonderful to have you. Let's start tonight by, I'm getting a weird echo. I don't know what's caused that, but yeah, I hope you don't hear it. Tonight, let's start with talking to Dr. Grayson about your history, what exactly you do and how you got involved in it.
Well, that's a long story. We could take up the whole time doing that, but I'll try to be brief. I guess I got very interested in both a mind-body connection when I was in graduate school. And I had a very interesting experience because there was not much taught in graduate school programs about that at that time. And so I talked a professor into doing a directed study on surveying the research and writing a paper on it, which I'd done. But then shortly after that, the semester was over, and I needed to take comprehensive exams in a few days. And I was in Massachusetts on a very cold winter day. I had a German Shepherd puppy that was getting big and getting out of the fence. I had to do some repair work. And I went out and to do that repair work. And the problem is it was a 20 mile an hour wind and about 20 degrees, and it was snowing like crazy. And I realized that as I was moving along in the work, I started to get a sore throat. And that was really discouraging to me because for the past 10 years, from my mid-teens to my mid-20s, I would have horrible sore throats and colds at least 3 or 4 times every year. And it would always start out with a sore throat. And then it would develop into the horrible debilitating cold as well as severe laryngitis and so on. And I thought, that's the last thing I need here right before comprehensive exams. And so then I suddenly thought about what I'd studied, that there was a mind-body connection with a variety of things, they thought at that point. Now we know it's impossible to ever separate mind and body. But then we were thinking it affected a few things like skin disorders, asthma, ulcers, and a few things like that. But it occurred to me, why would it be limited to one part of the body? How could that possibly be so? Why not other parts? And so with that, I thought, well, this sore throat and cold, I don't really want that now. I wonder what that could be expressing. And so I started asking myself a series of questions. You know, why might I need this? Or what would it get from me? Or what would it get me out of doing? And what emotion might be expressed in it? And what metaphor could be expressed in it? And since then, I've added a couple of other things to that list. You know, what belief might be there, or what culture belief, or what traumas may not be cleared, because we know there's a big connection there between illness and unresolved traumas. So anyway, I started asking those questions, and I came up with the one, you know, well, why might I, what would this get me out of doing? I thought, well, I want to get out of taking the exam. And then I thought, no, that's not really true, because I'm about 95-98% prepared, and I'll get that out of the way. I've given up weekends for several months to prepare for it. I don't want to do that again another 3 months. So I kept inquiring. I kept questioning. And what emotion might be expressed in that? And suddenly I saw my neighbor looking out of her back window over the yard where I was working. And I felt a big pang of guilt. And I thought, whoa, I'm really onto something here. What's this about? What in the world would I be feeling guilty about? And then I next thing I thought of was, am I trying to get out of doing something I promised to do for her aged father she takes care of? And I thought, no, I don't do that. I keep my word. If I promise to do something, I do it. And I was just going to do it next week, the day after I took my exam. And so it's not I'm trying to get out of that. I thought, well, what could this be then? And I realized something at that moment. I was projecting some ideas onto her that I had no idea whether they even occurred to her or not. But I was projecting onto her that she was seeing me out in the backyard in this horrible weather doing something for my dog when I'd not done what I was going to do for her father. And I said, okay, I'm really onto something here, because I know I'm not trying to get out of that, but I'm projecting and I'm feeling guilt. Well, one thing we now know, that guilt is one primary emotion in so many illnesses, because the system of guilt, the legal system inside us and our egoic mind, is where there's guilt and demands punishment. And what better place can we punish ourselves than right in our bodies? And so guilt is intricately woven into many, many of our physical symptoms. And so when I recognized that, it was my projection. That's the first time I realized how much we human beings project. And that what we're seeing is always through our own colored eyeglasses and our own meanings. And here was my first time to recognize that. So I thought, well, I prefer to handle this by getting sore throat and cold. And I thought, no way. What would I prefer to do? I thought, well, simply to deal with this projection part, because I'm not trying to get out doing anything. When I finish the work, I'll just go in and I'll give her a call and just tell her I've not forgotten her and her father, and I would be taking comps in a couple of days, and the next day I'd be over and do it. You know, once I recognized the guilt and I made a firm commitment to deal with it some other way, you know, within about 15 to 20 minutes, my sore throat went away, and it never developed into a horrible cold. And it's been decades now, and I've never had another one of those horrible sore throats and colds since. Why? Because each time I would start to get a little raspy throat or a little sniffles, I would ask myself those questions. Why might I need this? What would it get from me? What would it get me out of doing? What's emotion expressed in it? What's the metaphor being expressed in it? Then I've added, what belief system, a family belief or a cultural belief or a personal belief might be expressed here? Like, some people may believe, for example, I have to get the same illness my mother did at the same age. I believe if somebody sneezes on me, I have to catch a cold. You know, and all that kind of stuff. And it's just a belief. Or I've now realized, too, from all the studies, we know there's a high correlation between unresolved traumas and the onset of illness. If it's a little trauma, we might get a little symptom within a few hours or days. If it's a serious trauma, it might be a serious illness within the next year or two. And if it's cumulative childhood traumas, we might get a serious illness in early adult life. It's very common, and so on. So anyway, I learned to ask myself those kind of questions anytime I would start to get a symptom. And I find once I could identify it and deal with it differently, the symptom invariably would go away. And that's what put me onto this whole thing, and realizing that there was greater power that we had than I thought. Then the other part of my history was, I had a chance to spend a weekend with physicist David Bohm, who wrote Wholeness and Implicate Order. And that was a major turning point in my life, because he talked about everything being interconnected at this invisible level. It's like the one unified field, and everything, this invisible level, everything that is and was and exists is just energy and information, all encoded in that field, and none of us can be separate from it. In fact, as Einstein put it, it's just an optical illusion that we're separate. And so with that, I had a major epiphany of seeing everything as interconnected, and that's what awakened a whole spiritual perspective for me. I had rejected a strong fundamentalist background I grew up in and tossed that away because this idea of a punishing God up in the sky who will reward you and punish you if you're a good boy or a bad boy just didn't appeal to me. It didn't make sense to me. But here was another perspective of another dimension of higher consciousness that really made sense to me. And once I realized that we're part of this field, we're part of what we call God, we have amazing power that we have disowned. And maybe the thing we're frightened the most of in this world is to own the power that we are and the love that we are and the potentiality that we have for healing ourselves and others. And so when I put all those together, that's what began to make a whole difference in my life. Because I'd studied most of the major forms of psychotherapy and practiced them and taught them. And then I began to expand into others and spiritual perspective, and then energy psychology came along where you could do meridian stimulation or bilateral brain stimulation, and I found those powerful tools for clearing out effects of traumas and negative beliefs in particular. So putting all those together, I guess that would be kind of a quick summary of my background and how I came to write this book, Use Your Body to Heal Your Mind, and the subtopic being releasing all barriers to health, healing, and happiness.
Hey, Dr. Grayson, I have a question for you.
Sure.
You know, I know this wouldn't be in keeping with being integrity, but do you think if it's possible to identify the underlying emotion and release or clear that, that would clear the symptoms?
Sometimes it absolutely does. Other times it may not, because it may be several tentacles to the octopus. Sometimes it might be my belief system. Sometimes it might be an emotion. Sometimes it might be unclear traumas. Sometimes it might be a metaphor. And sometimes it might be a combination of things. And so it's not one simple answer, but it's to be curious about what it is and keep exploring it until we come up with the answer. That's the key point.
Now, can you just talk a little bit about what you did for 30 years as in your private practice?
Well, I work with people, 40, 45 hours a week. And so I've seen a lot of people over the course of time. And I combined all the things I mentioned before, the diverse forms of psychotherapy, spiritual wisdom from around the world, and quantum physics, neuropsychology, and that perspective together. I always look for ways to help people find joy and happiness as soon as possible and health, rather than having to make it take a long time.
Well, thank you.
Doctor, I've got a question about this list, because it's so fascinating. You know, I'm working with a man right now who helps people heal with muscle testing, and he actually tests his own body as he goes down this list and checks someone else's body. Now, does this, it feels similar in the sense that, okay, what do I believe? What does it get me out of doing? Is there something I feel guilty about? All of these questions, do you use them in dealing with other people as well as yourself? And if so, do you have to have that person face-to-face and have them tell you how they feel, or do you have another means of dealing with it?
Well, I do use the muscle testing because I do find that's, Freud thought that dreams were the royal road to the unconscious. I think maybe muscle testing from applied kinesiology is more of the royal road even than that, far more so.
Mm-hmm.
Because if 95% of all of our behaviors are unconscious, which is huge, then we need some way to access it, because we're influenced by all this early programming and early childhood. And the muscle testing helps take us to things that are not remembered. I mean, how many of us remember more than a handful of things prior to school age, prior to age 5? You know, I have maybe 4 memories prior to that time. And here I wrote my operating system for my life, and I don't even remember it. And that's where we form our attitudes and our feelings about how much power we have, or how much worth we have or don't have, or how we deserve something or don't deserve it, or how safe or dangerous love is, or relationships, or closeness, and so on. Or showing our power, or shining our light. We have all these beliefs in there. And one thing that made me become aware that's pretty much universal, I teach seminars, training seminars around the country and other countries, and I was doing a seminar in Boston about 2 or 3 years ago when I was writing this book, actually. And I had the inspiration at the beginning of it to ask people, how many people here want to have a totally healthy and happy life? And everybody's hand went up. And I said, with your permission, I'd like to quickly come around and test people's arms, because with these training seminars, I like to limit them to about 50 or 60 people so I can have more of a personal contact and help them develop more tools themselves. And so I could quickly go around, run around to that group and do that. And I said, well, I wanted to test and see how many of you think you deserve it or it's safe to have a totally healthy and happy life. They all agreed to participate, and I went around and quickly tested it. I thought maybe a third of them might have those beliefs, one or the other. What blew my mind was the result. The result was that 82% had both of those beliefs, that they didn't deserve a totally healthy and happy life, and it was not safe to have a totally healthy and happy life. And the other 18% had one or the other. And I thought, wow, this is amazing. And then I asked them to raise their hands and say, how many of you actually do have a pretty much totally healthy and happy life? No hands went up. I thought, that's the confirmation of the same thing we got from the muscle testing. What's demonstrated in the life is really the same thing we got through the muscle testing. Whereas we kind of deny that a lot of the time. Well, I thought, well, is this just New Englanders or Bostonians that got this answer? I did a seminar in New York City a couple of weeks later, got the same response. I did it in Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina. I did it in Austin, Texas, Chicago, Illinois, San Francisco, Seattle, and so on. I got the same response everywhere. And I thought, this says something about the human condition, that at some level, whereas consciously we think, yeah, I'm deserving, it's safe, and I'm worthy, and all these kind of things to be totally healthy and happy, but I have some other underlying beliefs that probably I developed when I was 1 year or 2 years old, 3 years old, 4 years old, somewhere through there. And that has been ruling my life, and it rules all of our lives. And that's why I think there's so much unhealth in our culture. I mean, we spend more on medical care than any other country in the world. And yet, in terms of the death rate and the success rate with healing, we're 27th in the world. It's a major difference.
Yeah, I know.
It's a major, major difference. And I think one thing is we don't deal with, yes, there are problems with weight, and that's a big issue, and there are problems with drugs, and there are side effects of medicines which create, like some people say, there are more deaths from medical intervention than anything else, according to some studies. But yes, those are the problems, but there's a major one that's not attended to at all. Even though physicians would say, as the New England Journal of Medicine reported, that 80% of our symptoms are stress-related. But the only way they typically deal with it is say, well, try to take it easy or take these pills, which creates some more problems. It does not get to the cause of the stress. And the cause.
That brings me to the next question. What do you suggest? How do we go from, obviously, the humanity in general, especially Americans at this point, don't feel safe about a lot of their life. How do we take them to a place? What's a good solution?
Well, one thing I've done in this book is I've outlined some tools that we can use that are very practical and very effective in dealing with a lot of these kind of negative beliefs about ourselves or about life. And
what's the name of the book again, Doctor?
It's Use Your Body to Heal Your Mind. And
say it
not
one
only,
more time.
Pardon?
Say it one more time, the name of the book?
Use Your Body to Heal Your Mind.
Very good. Thank you. Okay,
and
I'm sorry I interrupted you.
That's fine, and because I'm glad to mention again, because if people read that, I have clear descriptions of steps they can take for identifying causes behind their symptoms and descriptions of tools that they can use on themselves to clear those beliefs or those traumas or those identifications or the downloads from our parents or whatever they might be. And in addition to that, people can go to my website and download free of charge DVDs of me demonstrating those tools to make it easier to use them. I just want people to be able to use them and be healthier and happier. And so they can go there and get that free of charge. It's just henrygrayson.com is my website. And they can download those
tools
for self-healing. Yes?
I guess the question I have is, you know, based on what you've learned from all the research and everything that went into the book, what would you say is the most common issue or barrier that you find in, you know, if you were looking like at, you know, all the different people around the United States?
I can't say that there is the most common because we have multitudes, all of us, and all of them are part of it. Certainly the uncleared, painful experiences that we have are encodings of information in our limbic system and our survival brain. And this, you know, we've heard this statement, you know, once bitten, twice shy. One neuroscientist put it to me when I was talking with him on my radio show a couple of years ago, and he said, that is the most gross understatement. He says, that part of our brain, our survival brain, our old reptilian brain, is 15 to 18 times more active than it needs to be for our stage of evolution. what that means is that we're going around and we're not having to fight tigers and boa constrictors and things like that like the caveman did, but we're reacting to every little thing around as if they were tigers and snakes. And we're experiencing stress and danger with every little thing. We worry about this, we project into the future, and we're fearing something else and believing something else. And we're living in this, which keeps the stress hormones flowing. When we keep the stress hormones flowing, it dumbs us down. It constricts the blood flow from our frontal lobes. And so we're not as intelligent, we're not as creative in our problem solving. When that happens, we become even more stressed. And then on top of that, when we go into that fight or flight mode, the blood goes away from not just our brain, but from our stomach as well. And we can't digest our foods, and so therefore it goes to the arms and legs for fight or flight. If it does, we don't have the blood there to promote the food digestion, then our immune system gets weak. So it's a very strong connection between all of this stuff. What traumas, painful experience we've had, whether it's in childhood or it's in adult life, or even back in the uterus, or maybe even genetic memories, all of these contribute to it. And as well as what beliefs that grew out of that, because out of our painful experiences, we draw conclusions like I'm not worthy, or I'm not good enough, or I'm not lovable, or I'm going to be abandoned, or nobody likes me, or I'm not capable, I can't learn new things, and on it goes. Now, in the book, Use Your Body to Heal Your Mind, I give checklists in there where people can go over there and select, you know, what the beliefs seem to be that are going on in their life or being manifested, a long list of them. They check the ones that are appropriate, or they check the traumas or painful experiences they've had as children, as adults. Okay, as they do that, it brings it into focus. Well, these are the things I need to get cleared. I need to clear these out like I clear out old stuff in my computer and it gums it up. And the methods we can describe there that have to do with stimulation of meridians, with touching or tapping on acupressure points, with heightened focus of conscious intention combined with breathing and focus, they really work more quickly than all the other methods I've studied, and I've studied and taught most of them. And they're just so much more powerful. I'm just eager to get them out for people to use to be healthier and happier.
And they
no harmful side effects either. Yeah, go ahead.
So what I was going to say is, I was going to ask you, what is a good tool? And what you're saying is one of the tools that you learn in the book is that you can actually do tapping to work with some of these barriers.
Yes, and even more, I find even more powerful than the tapping is placing your fingers on the acupressure points, doing slow diaphragmatic breathing at the same time, which helps calm the limbic system, stating the emotion you're releasing to do with that particular problem. For example, if you're releasing effects of a trauma that you've been carrying with you and that gets activated over and over in your life, then if you bring your fingers to the eyebrow, which has an acupoint that deals with fear, then you focus on it and say, I now release all fear related to this trauma. And then you take a slow, deep breath, exhaling completely and inhaling slowly and deeply. And then you move to the outside edge of the eye, to another acupressure point, and you release all anger, resentment, and rage. And what I find, too, is that people touch these points, and they hold their fingers there, and are making these statements about what they're releasing. And suddenly, if there are feelings that often they weren't aware of that they felt, they might be aware that they felt guilt. They might not have been aware they felt fear or anger or whatever it was. But they get in touch with it, and they start feeling it, and they release it as they go through. And I find with two or three rounds of doing that with a trauma, with a painful experience, or with a belief, it's usually released. And
where do you draw the line between what you can learn in the book versus going to somebody who's been trained in what's in the book?
Well, what we can do in the book is a lot of stuff that we can use as first aid. We can cover a lot of things that could be affecting us. And I've seen people, I've heard reports from people that they've made some amazing progress, you know, just from following those things and instructions in the book. On the other hand, if you have somebody who's very experienced in doing it, they pick up the subtleties and that come out of the communication and help take you probably to a much deeper level, you know, and being much more thorough. And also just the joined consciousness. Like there's one phrase I like from one psycho-spiritual work called A Course in Miracles, and it says, when two minds are joined together in the search for truth, the ego cannot prevail. And I think that's an important component, too, because I find, yes, I can use these tools on myself, and they've helped me in a lot of ways, a lot of times. But there may be some times my ego mind wants me to be distracted from it, or wants me to forget about it, or it doesn't want me to think there's a problem there when it is, or I'm not disturbed about it when I am, and it gets reactivated. Well, to work with somebody else who can do the muscle testing can help break through that and help get to those unconscious barriers that are still running our lives, but we don't need to allow that to happen.
All righty. Thank you for that. We're just going to take a quick break. You've been listening to Spiritual Connections Radio. If you want to find out more about this show or any other shows, and, of course, this show is available in the archives for replay, so you, as all our shows are, so you, if you missed any part of this, you can actually go to the archives and listen to it. It'll be available. It usually is available about 5 or 6 minutes after the show ends. The website, of course, is www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. Off of the top of that website is the link for the archives. We just created a new archives webpage also that you can get to by going to the top of the website and clicking on archives. And what we've been trying to do is list all the radio shows that we've had in the past with the links for each of the shows. So you can just go and find them there very quickly. But as always, if you get to where the actual show is airing, all the archives are available there also. Dr. Grayson, can you go ahead and give out your website again?
Yes, it's just simply henrygrayson.com. That's spelled
G-R-A-Y-S-O-N. And tonight we're talking about your book, which is called Unconscious Barriers to Healing and Health.
No. Use Your Body to Heal Your Mind is the title.
There we go. Thank you.
People can find it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or whatever, or they can order from my website, whatever they prefer to do. But it's
when did that book come out?
About a year ago.
Oh, excellent. Mm-hmm. And you've been getting a lot of great feedback?
Yes, I have. People have been finding it very, very helpful. And I've been using it as a baseline for a lot of the training seminars I do around the country or in other countries. And I keep getting reports about how people are using it and finding themselves to able to make major changes and to make significant changes in their health or in their level of happiness or in their relationships or whatever.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and hand back to you, Pam.
All right. Well, I was sort of moving in a line of questioning that I thought was fascinating, and I loved your answers. We were talking about once you have a basic understanding as to what's going on with someone, the different things that you can do. And Mark mentioned tapping. We were talking about muscle testing. And earlier in the show, you mentioned something called bilateral brain stimulation and a few other things. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Part of the conversation. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yes. Sometimes I use a combination of those things, and especially mm-hmm. for, of course, one the most commonly known bilateral stimulation part now is EMDR, which was simply moving your eyes back and forth, left and right, while you focused on something. Then they discovered you could tap on opposite sides of the body, or have clickers in opposite ears, or whatever. And you could do the same thing for bilateral stimulation, that had an effect. Now, what I've discovered, too, is that if you can combine the two, like if a person has cleared a negative belief that I'm not worthy of taking really good care of myself, for example, they can never mm-hmm. do the things that they wanted to do to keep a healthy life. They know about them but don't do them, which is true, I guess, of most people in our culture. Like the American Heart Association says, only 10% of the people in our culture will do the things they know to do, they need to do to keep a healthy heart. Or only 5% of the people who go and study meditation will keep practicing it. So there's something going on at a much deeper level in all of us that we need to break through. And so we not only need to clear the traumas and negative beliefs, but then once we clear the negative belief, we need to put in a positive one in its place. Just like in your computer, if you clear out an old program, you need to put in a new program. The difference between us and the computer, once you put in the computer, it's there fully. But for us, we have to open up a whole new set of neural pathways with that. And so I find one procedure I've developed I call the occipital hold is where you hold your hand over your forehead and the other one at the base of the skull and the back over the occipital lobe. And you do slow, deep breathing that slows down the brain waves. In through the nose with the tongue behind the front upper teeth and exhaling through slightly parted lips. And you slow the brain waves down from beta to alpha, which means you, like you would do a mild state of hypnosis, which you would use to plant suggestions if you were going to a hypnotist. Well, you can do that with the breathing, and that means you're more susceptible to that suggestion. And so then if a person has believed in the past that I am totally unworthy of taking really good care of myself, and their new statement would be, I'm absolutely, totally worthy of taking outstanding good care of myself. I have them recite that to themselves several times after they've done that, slow down the brain waves and holding that pose. I have them make up an image that would represent it, because the statement stimulates the left brain, the image stimulates the right half of the brain, then have them anchored in their bodies with the emotion that comes up out of that, and then I have them make a declaration, like one declare to a witness, I now know all this to be true, and I know it to the depths of my being. And then I have them focus and holding the statement, image, and feeling, and body sensation together. Then I have them move their eyes back and forth, left and right, about 15 or 20 times. And I find that's the bilateral brain stimulation again. And what that does is help the two hemispheres of the brain communicate together more and work together more. They communicate through that little ribbon like corpus callosum that connects the left hemisphere and right hemisphere. And when you do that, then both parts of the brain kind of process it together. And I find that's a highly effective means for installing a new belief system. But just the installation is not sufficient either. Just like if you work out...
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. What's not sufficient?
I said just an installation of a new belief is not sufficient by itself. Just like if you work out, and you work out for several months, and you get some pretty good strong muscles, what if you stop exercising at that point? Your muscles atrophy. They go weaker. We have to keep doing whatever it is to keep those active. If we don't have our eyes, if we put something over our eyes, we lose our eyesight after a while. If we don't use our muscles, they atrophy. If we don't continually keep traumas cleared out, continually keep negative beliefs cleared, continually keep reinforcing our positive beliefs, we'll fall back into the old ruts. That's so easy to do it until it becomes a new habit pattern. But what a habit pattern is just simply opening up a new set of neural pathways. And so you can do that with that occipital hold process I just described. That helps open up a whole new set of neural pathways to make the new way of thinking a habit pattern. Then we're more likely to stay on track, you know, with whatever it is we're doing. Because if we can clear out the anchors that hold us back of the traumas, clear out the anchors of the belief systems that are negative, clear out the downloads where we just downloaded negative things from either one of our parents that were not productive and not good ways of functioning, and attitudes, and we install a new belief and new attitudes, then we are able to use the tools for ongoingly keeping our stress down, like practicing meditation, monitoring our thoughts, continuing to use these stimulation techniques to clear out even little traumas before they build up. And that way we stay healthy and happy.
That sounds great. Now the example that you just described of doing the bilateral brain stimulation as well as the holding of the forehead and the occipital ridge and the slow breathing, that sort of thing, is that all described in your book?
Yes, it is. And it's also there demonstrated on my website. People can download that and use it.
Love it. Well, that's some amazing information. Uncontrollable. You mentioned in your little blurb that you sent for the radio show, uncontrollable and accumulated traumas that occur by the very nature of life weigh heavily on the limbic system. Are you saying that the sort of an accumulation of traumas through the years build up the stress in the limbic system so that it actually becomes, without any stress in the environment, it actually is firing 15 to 18 times more active than it needs to be? Like, I'm quoting you a little bit earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Is that an accumulation in the limbic system?
Yeah, it's like a metaphor I like to use. We're all hiking up the hill of life with a backpack.
Mm-hmm.
And every time we have a disturbing experience, whether it was a major trauma or whether it was an insidious, ongoing developmental trauma, like we were always criticized or we felt rejected or we felt put down or we felt neglected, whatever it might be, any of those, they're cumulative. And every time we have an unclear trauma, it's like we put a chunk of lead in our backpack. Then we have another one that's not clear. There's another chunk of lead in our backpack. And then there's another one, and then another one. And then before you know it, our backpack is weighted down, and we have trouble hiking up the hill of life very well. And it's no wonder then we start to get symptoms of various sorts and get sick. But then every time we clear these, it's like every time we clear a different negative belief or a negative trauma, traumatic experience, it's like we're reaching in our backpack, taking one of those chunks of lead and tossing it aside. And we're clearing out another one, tossing it aside. We're lightening that load. And as we lighten that load, literally what we're doing is clearing out the information from the limbic system that sets off the stress hormones. When we do that, each time, we let that limbic system quiet down more and more and more. And as it quiets down more, then we can stay healthier and happier more. Then in addition to that, we have to catch all of our thoughts and make sure our thoughts aren't firing up the limbic system. My worry thoughts, my fear thoughts, my projections into the future about somebody else. Or on the other hand, negative beliefs. I'm not thinking thoughts that would support my negative beliefs. Because if I don't catch those thoughts will rebuild the problem. Because nothing in this physical universe is permanent. The only thing constant, as the ancient Greek philosopher Paracelsus said centuries ago, the only thing constant is change. We want to control what that change is and take back our power and let that change be more to something that supports the positive happiness and health rather than the thoughts and the changes being something that will disturb, you know, the whole body more and the mind more. Another thought, too, is I like to think of every little symptom we get, not as a little symptom I need to run, get rid of, whether it's to a traditional medical doctor or an alternative practitioner. While it's fine to do those things, I'm not saying you should never do them, because there's a place for that, too. But if we do that, let's not stop there. Let's still be curious about what's behind it, not just get rid of the symptom. To think of it as sort of like you're driving down an interstate highway, and you spaced out a little bit, what happens? You run over to the side and you hit those little markers that go brrr. It wakes you up, doesn't it? And hopefully it does, and you get back on the road. But what if it doesn't wake you up and you don't get back on the road? You run off the road. If that doesn't wake you up, then you run in the ditch. If that doesn't wake you up, you have to go over a cliff or into a river or into a tree. I think that's the thing about our bodies. Every little symptom is a piece of language that's a wake-up call for us. If we don't attend to them, we're more likely to end up in one of those ditches or against one of those trees at some point. And I like to think of it as every little symptom I have, it's time for me to check and see it as a language to be translated and deciphered so I can deal with it differently. When we do that, we preserve our health and our happiness. When we don't do that, we let ourselves build and build and build that load in our backpacks. And then we're going to crash into something that's more serious later on.
How fascinating. Now, let me ask you about fear, especially conditioned fear. As an example, this afternoon I was talking to my 20-year-old son, and I'm talking to him, and we're having a normal conversation, and then something comes out of my mouth that I think to myself, my God, that sounded just like my mother.
Exactly. Isn't it wonderful?
And we all have those moments.
Yes, we've all had that experience. I remember having that when my kids were young, and I caught myself doing the very thing my father did that I hated. And I remember saying, I don't want to do that. I'm not going to treat my kids that way. That's what I call downloads, because in our first 5 years of life, our brain waves are so slow that we're like in a deep hypnotic trance. And we're absorbing everything like little sponges. The good part of that is we absorb language quickly. Boy, if we heard three languages spoken around us at age 3, we learn all three with total ease. At age 16, you try to learn them, you got to work your buns off. So that's the good news is we learn things quickly. The bad news is we take in the negative things too. So we Just like little sponges, if our parents have a fearful attitude toward life, we'll probably download that. We'll start seeing the world as fearful. If they life is a struggle, we may download that. Life is a struggle. They see you have to worry about everything. Okay, we'll download that. If they put pressure on themselves, and that we will download that. On and on it goes. We'll download those very behaviors, many of which we hated, but we'll download them. The good news is we can use these processes to clear downloads as well. And because we don't have to keep them.
So when we clear our own negativity and our own negative download, you also stop the cycle of impinging that on the next generation and so on.
Right.
Isn't that how a negative culture is developed?
Exactly. We are changing not just ourselves, but we're starting to change the whole world as we change ourselves.
That's beautiful.
I remember a woman who was a naturopathic physician was in a study group of mine some years ago, and she was always talking about how she wanted to meditate regularly, and she couldn't keep it up. She'd do it for a week or two or three, and she'd stop. And she talked about that over and over again. One day she came in the group and shared with the group, she said, "I've been meditating for 2 months now, and I think I'll never stop." And people perked up and said, "Well, how did you do it? You were always so concerned with it. You couldn't do it." She said, "Well, one morning I got up when I realized that when I meditate, it's not just for me, but I'm helping to heal the whole world." She said, "When I realized that, I can't stop." And
wow.
I think if we realize that about ourselves, that every positive change we make in ourselves, every change in a positive attitude, our change to a loving attitude, our change to an accepting rather than a judging attitude, I'm not just helping myself. I'm radiating that out to countless numbers of people through the non-local mind, as the physicists call it, to countless numbers of people around me. That's the way I am truly helping to change the world.
And isn't that so true? You can't change the world without changing yourself.
That's the way we do it. Yes, exactly. Otherwise, if I'm trying to change the world, I'm probably going to have the opposite effect. It's like that famous quote from Mother Teresa when people ask her, "How come you never go to an anti-war demonstration?" And you've probably heard the story, but her reply was so brilliant. She says, "When there's a demonstration for peace, I will attend." Because she realized that the anti-war demonstration was an act of war in itself. And so if I'm fighting to change something, that's why the whole thing about war on cancer or fighting cancer, as they always say in the news, or battling cancer. No, that doesn't work. That's not the way we heal. We're giving it power by battling it. What we need to do is to change and have our bodies become more resilient and strong. And naturally, it takes care of that through the limbic system.
Hey, doctor, can we sidebar for a second and talk about one of your other books for a minute?
Sure.
I think originally how I first knew your name is by reading your book, Mindful Loving. Can you just kind of talk about that a little bit and some of the tools that and how that book could help people?
Sure. Yeah. Because what I was realizing in that book is that most people think that love and relationships, you know, is that falling in love kind of syndrome. And yet what we know about that, it's what Wilhelm Reich, one of the contemporaries of Sigmund Freud, said, that's a state of temporary psychosis. And what we're doing, we create an imaginary image of the other person, and that's what we're falling so madly in love with. That's why you have these phrases, these words we use, falling head over heels, madly in love, you know, crazy about you. All these words denote insanity because we're making up an image that gets us so excited. We're thinking this person's going to fill up my life, this person will give me love, this person will give me security. All that does is make us weaker. And then at some point it crashes, and then we either break up the relationship or then people will finally learn to really love each other. And it's a small percentage in our culture that do that because, you know, it's just we've not been taught to do that. We've been taught you're supposed to have the falling in love syndrome, you know, taking place. But if we can get past that and begin to own the love that we are, know, because from a spiritual perspective, we're part of what we call God. Love is not out there somewhere. We're part of that unified field that we call God or the higher source or love itself. And mostly we think we're separate from it. Then we seek it in other people. Then we get upset because they don't provide it to us. Then we feel like victims again. And so that's the thing that I think is important for us to deal with, is that we are much more than we think we are ourselves, that we are much not so incomplete that somebody else needs to complete us or make us happy, but that we have that power inside. And as I am being that, then paradoxically I attract more love, not because I think it's out there, but because I'm being that. When I'm being that, I send forth a magnetic field to attract it as well.
Thank you. So so that's another book that people can pick up out there, and I know I really enjoyed reading it. So with that, I will go back to talking to the original topic on the book that's out now. What questions do you have, Pam?
Well, I wanted to find out if, by reading this new book, if you could read the book and use the material to not only help yourself, but to help others, like your children or your spouse or other people. Would it take them reading the book and doing it on themselves, or could you actually learn to help the people in your immediate family, for example?
Oh, absolutely. I think one simple level we can all do on ourselves or with family members, if we had something that was disturbing that happened. You know, a kid had something that happened at school. He was bullied, or a teacher embarrassed him in front of the class, or whatever.
Right.
If you just take 5 minutes and go through one of these rounds of either touching or tapping on the acupressure points with the intention to release it, and go through that around 2 or 3 times, one can clear that out and not carry it on, you know, ongoingly. And so I teach couples to learn to use this with themselves, you know, with each other, you know, with themselves. Instead of when we reacting to somebody emotionally, you know, in a strong way, when not much happened, it means something old is triggered for me. You know, there's an old saying that says it so beautifully: if it's hysterical, it has to be historical. And that means if I'm having a strong overreaction to a simple thing that somebody said or did, it triggers something from my past in my limbic system. And so what if a couple could learn to just come to each other and say, honey, I'm reacting to you like I did to mom or dad when I was a kid. And I think it has to do with this trauma I experienced with them. Would you guide me through one of these processes so I can clear that a little bit more? Wow, how comforting and healing can that be, instead of fighting and battling about it? Then we can truly be healers to each other, you know, and loving healers and comforters to each other. And we can do the same thing, you know, to prevent illness. You know, that we can know that traumas cumulatively would produce them, or negative beliefs. Or we can even use our consciousness, instead of clearings, to create healing rituals. You know, instead of, like one simple thing I do when I take some supplements and variety of them, but I think the major benefit I get is when I take each one and I put it in a little paper bathroom cup, I think of the B vitamin, oh, that's going to be very good for my brain. Or the vitamin E, that's great for my arteries, or, you know, and so on. And as I do that, I'm creating the power of the placebo effect at the same time. And so I think probably 3/4 of the benefit I get is my telling my body how it's going to use those. And maybe 1/4 of it might be the benefit that's linear from the content itself.
It would be a lot cheaper if you just used the placebo and just go and buy all the vitamins.
That's right. I've been thinking about actually doing that. I've been just writing the names of them on little pieces of paper. And I'll take them, put them back up, and do that. Because I think if something happened when a guy pumped my septic tank a couple of years ago, I happened to be home when he came to do that, and we had a little conversation. He says, "Well, your tank doesn't have not so bad here." Says, "But most people's tanks I pump, there's an inch, 2 or 3 inches layers of pills on top of it usually." What that said to me, I said, "They're not broken up or digested." He says, "No, they're still there intact." And I said, what that says to me then is a lot of people thinking they're benefiting from their meds, but it's a placebo. A lot of people are thinking they're benefiting from their supplements, but it's a placebo.
Wow.
And so he was kind of demonstrating how a lot of that stuff just goes through and doesn't even break down and digest. But people are believing it will, and so it does. And of course, now there's mounting evidence and studies that show the power of placebo.
Hey, Dr. Grayson, what do you think is the biggest aha that you have as far as the feedback you've been getting from everybody about the book?
I don't know if I would say a biggest aha, but what I have seen some people do is some pretty dramatic things. I've seen some people heal themselves from what they thought would be or were told would be incurable cancer. I think of one person who had a huge tumor in her stomach, an uterus actually, and cancer markers were about almost 2,300 or 2,200, and she began to clear out all the childhood traumas and adult traumas that she had and change her beliefs and so on. And she went to the doctor, and she'd also told the chemotherapy what to do to avoid going to any other parts of the body but only to go to cancer cells and not to touch anything else, which reduced the side effects immensely. And went back to the doctor, and they took some x-rays, and they found that the whole thing had shrunk down to the size of a walnut from a grapefruit size. And the cancer markers were down to like 178 from almost 2,300. And they said, well, we should really go in there and take this out just to be on the safe side. They opened her up and took it out and found just a bunch of dead cancer cells. You know, this is something she was able to do with herself.
And
what she did by clearing a whole series of traumas and negative beliefs, she did not need that expression in her immune system. And by telling her body how to use the other interventions, the doctor said, this is just unheard of. This just doesn't happen this way. You know, yes, the chemo, they said, would have some effect, but shrinking it that much and killing the whole thing and that length of time, it may have never seen it happen before. She did it with her mind. She freed
so
up
where can
energy,
people find
clearing.
You today? Are you doing conferences across the country?
I do quite a few, yes. I do a lot of training seminars around the country as well as speaking engagements. And I, in some ways, I don't like that much travel, but on the other hand, I just feel like I just want to spread the word of how people can use these tools to be healthier and happier.
And that's great. Go ahead and give out your website again.
It's just my name, henrygrayson.com. That's G-R-A-Y-S-O-N.
And give everybody the title of the book we've been talking about today.
Yes, that's Use Your Body to Heal Your Mind, and the subtitle is Revolutionary Tools to Release All Barriers to Healing, Health, and Happiness.
Before
that's
we end
great.
The show, is there something you'd like to tell the audience as far as a final comment or something you want to share with them?
I think the main thing I would share is that we all are kind of living according to the preamble of our Constitution that says we have the rights to life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness. Not happiness, but just pursuing it. That fits into what our human egos do, is just in the chase, keeping the chase, thinking there's something outside us that will make us happy, something outside us that will make us healthy, something outside that will fill me up, someone outside me that will bring the love, some other power outside me that will bring the healing. But no, if we can recognize I am whole already, and my wholeness is part of the divine, is part of the all that is, a part of that powerful healing nature of the universe. I'm part of that, not separate from it, as Einstein pointed out. It's an optical illusion that we're separate. And if we can come to believe who we really are and embrace that power within us, then we can have so much more healing and happiness and health and success in every area of our lives. And cease feeling so much like a victim so much of the time.
Sounds good. Thank you so much for being on the show and sharing information. As we were talking on the show today, everybody make sure to go out there and grab this book and start implementing it. Thank you, Pam, for being on as always. And
thank you.
Good night,
I'm
everybody.
I'm going to run out and get the book tomorrow.
And I'd like to thank you for the opportunity of dialoguing with you.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
Fly away on our own. Imagine creation. You take me to the life is but a dream.